Mary Rock, formerly Sister Joel, and I, Sister Ann Cronin, formerly Sister Marguerite. And Sister Joel, we were talking about some of your experiences at Regis, so would you want to begin there?
Well, you know, I was at Regis twice. The first time I went in 1935, and there were a few striking memories of those early days. Regis wanted very much to build a science building, but Cardinal O'Connell would not give them that permission. And in the commencement exercises for 1935, the commencement speaker was a Jesuit from Weston. I think it was Father Ahern. I'm not sure on that name, but I'm quite sure it was he. And his talk was on the importance of science for the Catholic scholar. And I think the Cardinal was very impressed by his message. And before he left the campus, he told the sisters, the president and the dean, I believe, that yes, they could build a science building. It just thrilled me, not that I'm a scientist at all, but it was a fad, perhaps, to pray for a sign that when somebody died belonging to you, a sign that they were in heaven. And people had all these stories about the signs that God gave them. And there was no need of my even questioning that my mother in heaven.
I still wanted that sign.
Followed the fad, and I asked God, the sign I wanted that my mother was in heaven was that he would permit the sisters to build a science, get that permission to build a science building. And then every time I saw the science building, it would remind me that my mother was in heaven, even though I felt sure she was.
Sure.
So that is why that science building at Regis, the first one, there is another beautiful addition to it.
That's right.
But the first one came to them as an answer to prayer.
And wasn't it named after Cardinal O'Connell? Was it the Cardinal O'Connell
I
science
think it was.
Building?
I think it was, yes.
Yeah.
Another thing that there was a tremendous amount of hard work went into those early days at Regis. The students and the sisters lived in the same corridors and used the same labs, but they were not available to the sisters until after 10 o'clock when the students were back in their rooms. A very generous
Well, it'll come to you.
It will come to me. Sister Monica.
Oh, yes.
Would go every night after 10 o'clock when all the students were back in their rooms, and she would clean in all the sinks in the labs so that when the sisters went out to use them, there were no signs of makeup or anything else around.
What a thoughtful thing. Yeah.
And I thought how I was so impressed by that extra.
Yeah. And Sister Monica did all kinds of extras,
she did. She was a very selfless person.
She was more or less in charge of what we'd say today, housekeeping.
Yes. The other, on the faculty was a priest, but it was always called Dr. Lord.
Oh, yes.
A convert who formerly was on the highly esteemed professor at Harvard.
That's right.
And I was there when World War II broke out. And Father Lord spoke to the student body and the faculty. And he was extremely concerned. And he said the most terrible thing that will happen to our country because of this war is violence. We have never had an enemy, an Asian enemy. And the Asians do not value life. Life is cheap to them. That's not our philosophy. We value human life. But our boys will have to be trained to match the enemy. And they're going to be trained not to hold back. And he said it will come out in their children. And there will be a terrible violence. And I have often recalled his words.
They were so prophetic.
And thought how true.
Yes.
How very true today.
Yes.
We are still feeling it.
Yeah. His father-in-law was a psychiatrist, I believe, of the training. That was his...
Well, no, he was a historian.
But also a psychiatrist.
Oh, maybe both.
Yes,
was
he was.
He both?
Yes, because he was a curate of St. Stephen's while he taught at Regis, and I was stationed there. And
there was another psychiatrist.
He was called in on cases where there were people suffering from mental disturbances, and it was always Father Lord that was Dr. Lord.
Now, there were two priests, you know, on the faculty. One was in the psychology department.
I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall his name. It could be that,
sure.
that Father Lord had degrees in both.
That's true.
Mm, yes.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Sister Mildred was very strict. And the surprising thing, and with all her strictness, when the girls graduated from Regis, they always returned to Sister Mildred with stories of their family life, their marriages, and requests for prayers.
And Sister Mildred was the dean of Regis at the time, or the registrar?
Registrar. She
was
the
registrar.
The Sister Finbar was
the
dean. It was interesting, my return, I'm digressing a bit when you mentioned Sister Finbar, but I left Regis in 1944, and returned to Regis in 1972. It happened on the day of Sister Finbar's funeral. I met the president of Regis, Sister Jeanne d'Arc, who said to me, "I hear of all that you are doing in the public library at Medford, but isn't it sad you're not doing that for your own congregation at Regis?" And I said, "Well, Sister, I didn't know Regis wanted me or was looking for me."
Good.
And she asked me, would I be interested in coming? And I said, "Of course I would." And then Sister arranged an appointment, and I went back to Regis as reference librarian and instructor in children's literature. But back... It's not on.
Yes, it is.
Back to those early days, 1935 to 1944, Regis was growing fast and was making an impression. I always remember that Sister Alphonsina was a member of the National American Historical Association and was instrumental in their annual meeting being held at Regis, and how very complimentary all those people were about the place and the hospitality, and particularly the food service and the work of Sister Carlotta, who at that time planned menus, was head of the dietary department and of the food majors program. And a similar event was at the Golden Jubilee of Cardinal Spellman's aunt,
Sister Philomena,
where there were very notable guests, and four different dinners served simultaneously.
Is that right?
One for the cardinal and the clergy, one for the family, one for the invited other guests, and all of that went in perfect order.
And one for the whole community.
And one for the whole
there.
The sisters.
That's
and one
right.
for the Sister Carlotta planned all of those, and there was no caterer other than Sister Carlotta's planning.
And it went flawlessly.
And it went flawlessly. And we also, the younger, I was the junior there, and one of my tasks was when a guest came, after the talk, the person would be served a collation, and the dean and the registrar sat with the speaker, and I had to serve them, and my instructions were, you do not leave. You stand behind the person to see if you can give them
assist
in any way. And it was very interesting. Some of the speakers, one of them was Baroness de Hewick.
Oh, yes.
And she was only beginning her work in New York City at the time. I think it was Hospitality House. And I do remember serving her. She spoke like a saint. But she came dressed in a tight sweater and skirt, which were forbidden the sodality members to wear at that time by Sister Mildred. And she sat on a table during her talk. But her talk was beautiful about our membership in the mystical body. And it's our obligation to reach out to others. After I had served her, and she sat, pushed the chair back, and took out a cigarette and lit it. And I was interested in watching her watch Sister Mildred and Sister Finbar's reaction. And I thought she was just enjoying doing that just to see how they would react. But they didn't say a word.
You give them credit for
I
that.
I do. I give them credit
very
that
good.
Whatever their expression, and even their expression didn't change too much.
Very good.
But I do think that she...
But you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. At that time we had the Catholic Literary Revival, and we had wonderful speakers, Wilfred Menel, Alice Menel, Maisie Ward, so many wonderful
writers.
That during the Mexican Revolution, when the people were in, the religious were in secular clothes, we had one woman speak to us. Her last name was Mary Del Val, and we all wondered if she were related to Cardinal Mary Del Val. But, and also we felt that she was a religious in disguise, but never said she was. The Baroness, the Trapp family,
Madame von Trapp,
had recently come with her family to New York, and she was on a lecture tour. And at the time, the college could not afford the whole family, but they could afford her as speaker. One person who contributed very much to my education at Regis, my liberal education, was Sister Lucilla. And one of the first close friends I made in religion, and who introduced me to the very best in reading, in both in spiritual reading and in literature. And
And Sister Lucilla at that time was dean of the college, or was
a
professor?
She was Latin. Well, in the beginning she was Latin professor, head of the Latin department, and during an illness was replaced by a Jesuit from Weston, who was amazed at the wealth of information in classics that Sister had imparted to her students. I didn't take Latin. I did take logic from Sister. Sister Elizabeth Francis was a very unusual, happy person. And she loved nature and went walking every day through the woods and would bring home lady slippers. And we all had a turn on the switchboard. And I do remember that the only calls I didn't like to take were from the Daughters of the American Republic, because they seemed to check us. And they checked Sister Elizabeth. They did not know who the sister was, but one of our members was picking lady slippers, and these flowers will soon be extinct, and she cannot do it anymore. Will you please tell her? And another time, at Christmas Eve, when they were watching the, during the war, the tower was a lookout for enemy planes, and the beautiful chimes on the tower on Christmas Eve were a tradition. And Daughters of the American Republic called to say, please turn off that music. It is distracting the men from their mission.
Well, that's understandable, of course. Those were dangerous
times.
They
were dangerous times, and there probably was a lot of truth to that. There was a great deal of pageantry, which I saw there, like the pageantry for commencements. When I returned many years later, I learned that at one point in the 70s, the students asked to please bring back the daisy chain and the early pageantry that they had at commencement earlier.
Very interesting.
Which
it was done.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, your first 9 years were followed by?
My first 9 years were followed by 5 years at St. Agnes's in Arlington. I think I have mentioned that.
You have mentioned that, and you're happy to say
that. And then in 1949, I was missioned back to St. Joseph Novitiate. And
that was the time we were establishing the college.
The College of St. Joseph, and I was to set up the library there. And I think I also mentioned how much I enjoyed work there. I was deeply indebted to Mr. O'Loughlin and to Philip McNiff, both of whom gave me invaluable assistance.
I'm sure. And Mr. O'Loughlin, of course, was the father of
Sister
Anne Marie. Is it Alice?
Yes.
Alice O'Loughlin.
Alice O'Loughlin.
That's
yes.
Right. And he at the same time was?
Assistant librarian at
Boston College.
At Boston College. And Philip McNiff was at the Lamont Library
at
Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
When I was at the Lamont Library opened while I was studying at Simmons. My prayer at Simmons was for the Holy Spirit to tell me when to speak and when to keep silent, because it was a new experience in a secular
college.
Most of the class were men, many getting 2 degrees that through the GI Bill before it would become
expire,
and it was coming soon.
Sure.
One of the questions asked was, is there anybody in the class who has seen, in the Lamont Library, there were 2 of us in the class. Has any woman in this class seen the Lamont Library? And one girl put her hand up, and I kept mine down, and he said, how could you? They don't allow women in the class. That prayer served me very well. The only time I mentioned prejudice at times. The only prejudice I saw at Simmons was from a very exceptional professor who was imported for the summer from Rutgers, and she did have a prejudice against nuns. Other than that, I didn't see any.
When you finished Simmons, what?
Well, my 11 years at the College of St. Joseph were interrupted, as I mentioned, filling in teaching positions, but one of them was in Georgia.
Oh, yes. Tell us something of Georgia now. I think we referred to it, but tell us about the sisters and...
The sisters in Georgia were diocesan.
They were St. Joseph sisters.
St. Joseph sisters from Florida. And when the Diocese of Florida included Georgia, and they were... Then Georgia became a separate diocese, and all the sisters of St. Joseph in Georgia had to separate from the Florida diocese and be under the bishop in Georgia. There were very few in Georgia, and for that reason, they finally had to become part of Carondelet.
Oh, is that how they were?
That's how they are now.
Related, yes.
Yes.
Are they still in Georgia?
They're still in Georgia, but...
What city were you in?
I was in Augusta.
Mm-hmm.
Since I left, they had to... give up being a separate province and become part of the St. Louis province.
They were so small.
They were
so
small. They had so few.
How did a northerner get along with these southern belles, so called?
Well, considering they were very generous. They made some great concessions. They went with me to visit on St. Joseph's Day to visit the high school run by the Franciscans from Mount Alvernia, the Black High School, we called it. And one of them came with me, and one of her students drove us, and the students gave us a very welcome reception. Did I tell you this?
No, I don't think so.
We were the first white people who visited them and looked as though we liked them.
Oh.
Most people, they told us, looked down their noses at us.
Right.
We visited each classroom and they sang for us beautifully. The only classroom we went into where there was a hesitation was the classroom of a very young white priest.
Oh.
And when he said, "I'm going to have my class sing for you," they said, "No, our teacher will sing for you." And he was very bashful and said he just couldn't do that. They would sing. Well, and he told the song they'd sing, and they kept still. Nobody parted his lips. And it was very embarrassing, but we made a few comments and left.
What was life like in the convent down there, and how did it compare with our living here?
Well, in some ways, they were freer.
That wouldn't be hard.
I never understood New England Puritanism until I went to Georgia.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's interesting.
But they were stricter. Every Friday night they had Dafy, which is everybody lowered her veil, knelt down before the superior, told
her faults.
This was once a month.
Well, we had that type of chapter.
It was
once
our
a
chapter.
Month.
They
yes.
called it Dafy. They said that's what Francis de Sales called it.
I
challenge you.
Oh.
And you told what your particular examen had been the last month and how many times a week you failed.
Oh.
And what your new particular examen would be for the next month and ask them to pray you'd keep it. And they loved to tell the story of the sister who always said her particular examen was charity to her neighbor, and during the month she never violated it, and she hoped that she would not violate it during the coming month. And that was her favorite tale over Daffy. But the joke over Daffy was, Sister Philippa and I, it was our first Sunday, we arrived on Sunday night, and everybody was so pleasant and making us feel at home, one of them said to me, we're going to have Daffy tonight. Well, I had no idea what Daffy was.
You thought it was a dessert.
I did. some kind of a party. And
sure.
Around 7:30, all the chairs were moved to the four walls, and they all sat around looking at each other. And the youngest in
Began.
The house, a novice, lowered her veil and knelt before the superior and went through the form. And I was feeling sorry for her, thinking, well, she's young and that's in, she hasn't made finals yet, so it must be for them. But it went up and up in the rank.
Were you expected to take a turn?
Well, I didn't know, and I looked across at Sister Philippa, who was on the other side of the room, and she didn't respond in any way. So I said, well, I guess I'll do it.
Oh, good for you.
So I did it. And when it was all over, I told them. That was quite an initiation they gave me. And they loved to tell a story that the night the Boston nuns got caught in Daffy. And not, they had the discipline every Friday night.
Uh-huh.
Those were...
Well, we had it every Saturday night.
Every?
Every Saturday night, yes. We did.
They were poorer, much poorer.
Oh, I'm sure.
I can remember Sister Marjorie Marie's father was traveling through Georgia, and she was in the novitiate at the time, and he brought us a fruitcake.
Oh.
And they were thrilled because they never had, they couldn't afford a fruitcake for Thanksgiving.
Oh, my. Goodness.
But unlike us, they soaked that cake in brandy a couple of days and nights before Thanksgiving. They served steak every morning to the priest for his breakfast. They never had steak themselves.
Well, that's not too unlike our. We always fed the priest far better than we fed ourselves. Now, how long were you in Georgia?
I was in Georgia one school year.
That was a wonderful experience.
It really was.
Yes.
I had a boy in class who never studied, and he came to me one night and said, Sister, would you excuse me from half my homework? Dorothy Day is sleeping at my house tonight.
Oh.
I said, John, for Dorothy Day, I'll excuse you from all your homework. Knowing he never did it. He was not there in the morning. And I said, well, that was a mistake. And at 9:30, there was a knock at the door. There was John with Dorothy.
Oh, how nice.
He brought her in as much as they see.
She's real and
she's
she was
real
kind.
And she was here.
Now, when you came back from Georgia?
We came back and spent a week in Washington because Sister Philippa's brother was in Washington, and we met the future president. A future president was our guide for a whole day through the Senate. And the house.
And he was?
He was Lyndon Johnson.
Oh, very interesting.
And when I came back, I went back to the novitiate, continued in
your
the library and teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took sick in 1960, and I was sick almost a whole year.
Oh my goodness.
About 6 or 8 months.
And were you here at
I was
the College of St. Joseph, or were you in Bethany?
I was in St. Elizabeth's for maybe 6 weeks, and I was here recuperating, and I was at Brighton.
Who were some of the nurses at that time?
Sister Cordula, I think, was in charge.
Is that right?
Time.
Yeah.
And a group of us slept in the dormitory of the novitiate.
Oh, yes.
Catherine Donovan,
mm-hmm.
and Janet Walsh, and Marie Louise, and Titus,
oh.
and myself. And I'm not sure if Sister Philippa was there or not. And then the sisters would come over from Regis to take the novices to Sunday school. And they would sleep in that dorm.
I see. Yeah.
Then they built a wing onto Bethany.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And then we all got very nice rooms
very
in that
good.
Wing.
You deserve them
a
after
treat.
Dawn
that
living.
That was a treat.
Right.
It's now the Tabor group.
Oh, yes, in St. Joseph's Hall, so-called. And after your year of illness, you recuperated and went?
When I got sick, excuse me, I had been missioned from the novitiate to Cardinal Spellman High School.
Oh.
And I was only there couple of months, maybe in the end of October, I took sick,
mm-hmm.
and that was when that was it. Was
I see.
Mm-hmm. I went back to Cardinal Spellman.
Good.
And I remained there 6 years.
Oh, did you?
And I set up the high school library there.
Did you teach any courses in addition?
I filled in sometimes.
I'm sure.
I filled in.
Yes, but you weren't responsible for any course.
No, I wasn't. I was
mm-hmm. Full-time library work.
Mm-hmm. And what was very interesting about Cardinal Spellman...
Who was the principal of the school at the time?
Sister...
Vera?
Vera.
Mm-hmm.
I was there the second year. It had opened 1 year. I don't think any of those students, or very few of